Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken, so to speak.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and Happy New Year. We are ending 2018. I am recording this on New Year's Eve, 2018. So we are going into 2019, starting tomorrow. So Happy New Year, everybody. On today's show, we are going to do something a little bit different. I think all the bodybuilding podcasts and all the bodybuilding websites right now are doing 2018, the year in review, because 2018 is over. So they're talking about what happened in 2018 in the bodybuilding world. Most notably, of course, Sean Roden beating Phil Heath for the Mr. Olympia. But since this is Bodybuilding Legends and we talk about the history of bodybuilding, I thought we would do something a little bit different, and we could talk about what happened in previous years. So why don't we go back 30 years, 40 years, and 50 years from 2018 and go back to 1988, 1978, and 1968 and talk about what happened in the bodybuilding world 30, 40, and 50 years ago and talk about some bodybuilding history. So our guest for these shows, and we've got about two or three of these shows because we talked for so long, is one of my favorite guests. His name is Jerry Branum. And, of course, Jerry used to write for the magazines. He used to write for Joe Weider. He wrote for Iron Man for many years. He now has his own website called Applied Metabolics, which is very good because Jerry's very knowledgeable about supplements and about drugs and about training. So we brought Jerry on the show, and he's also, like I said, one of my favorite guests because he's got a lot of great stories. He actually moved to California in 1968, so he was there for the beginning of all this stuff. And he met Arnold when Arnold came over to the United States. And I think Jerry was only in California for a couple weeks when Arnold came over. So he was there. He hung out with all these guys, and he's got a great sense of history, and he's got some great stories to tell. So on today's show, we are going to go all the way back to 1968, 50 years ago, and we're going to talk to Jerry about some of the events that happened that year, including, of course, as I said, Arnold coming to the United States at 21 years old. He got beat by Frank Zane in the 1968 IFBB Mr. Universe contest, which was in Miami. And also, Sergio Oliva won his second Mr. Olympia contest. He was the king of bodybuilding back then. And Sergio was so good that he won that contest unopposed. Nobody even wanted to go up against Sergio. So that's how dominating Sergio was. And we also talk a little bit about the amateurs, including Jim Haislop, who won the Mr. America contest that year over Boyer Coe. And we talk about the NABBA Universe with Dennis Tinerino. So we've got some really, really good talking today with Jerry Branum. So you're going to really enjoy this show today. All right, I want to mention right off the bat that we are brought to you by our sponsor, Old School Labs. Now, I've been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. I'm talking no proprietary blends, no artificial flavors or sweeteners. You may have heard of their award-winning fat burner, Vintage Burn, which is the world's first muscle-preserving fat burner, or Vintage Blast, which is the world's first two-stage pre-workout. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. They're the brand that I used to win my last Natural Mr. Universe contest in the Masters division. They're also the company that sponsors Breon Ansley, who is the 2017 Classic Physique Olympia champion and also the 2018 Classic Physique Olympia champion. And Breon is also the 2018 Classic Physique Arnold Classic champion. They also sponsor 1983 Mr. Olympia Samir Banut and bodybuilding legend Tom Platz. So use the discount code LEGENDS12 when you go to oldschoollabs.com and you will get 12% off your order. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. All right, so how's everybody doing as the year winds down? I just got back from Chicago. I was out there on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. So So it was a very quick trip. I was only out there for 2 days, but it was a great trip. I got to see everybody in my family. We went to my cousin Jim's house on Christmas Eve, and I got to see everybody, all my cousins, and all the kids are getting so big now, and I got to see my nephews and niece. So it was really, really a great trip. So hope everybody, but it, man, this week flew by so fast, because by the time I got home, which was late Tuesday night, I went right back to work on Wednesday, and boom, here we are, another week gone. So now we are heading into New Year's Eve, but I'm not going anywhere on New Year's Eve, so at least I'll be home for this week. And my training has been going great. I'm really enjoying my training. I'm still staying lean. I think my body weight's only about 205 to 208, and my body weight for my last photo shoot was like 195, 198, so I'm exactly 10 pounds above where I was. My waist is only about an inch bigger. I'm still lean. My energy is up. I'm eating a lot. So my metabolism is really going great. My strength's getting a little stronger each week. So things are really, really going great. I'm so psyched for 2019. I'm so glad I did that photo shoot, because I'm so excited about my training now, and I'm really, really excited about making changes. I'm actually measuring my thighs and my calves every week, because those are the two body parts I really want to bring up. And usually I do measurements like every 4 weeks, but I wasn't really consistent with that before in the past, over the last couple of years. So now I'm doing those measurements every week. So basically I'm expecting that my training for my legs, for my thighs and my calves, is going to give me results every week. So that's the way I'm looking at it. I'm going to really push hard to make those gains and make sure that my training pays off with more, you know, bigger size for my legs. So yeah, I'm really, really excited about next year. I hope you guys, I hope your training is going well. If I still design training programs and nutrition, so if you guys are interested in that at all, you can always go to my website, which is dadbodtoripbod.com, and that's the number 2, dadbodtoripbod.com. And I've got the questionnaires on there, right online. You can write them out right there online and send it to me, and I will design you a new training program and a new diet if you're interested in doing that. And we also have follow-up programs, so every month I will be on top of you every week and make sure that you're making progress and change your training programs if you need to, or your training or your diet or whatever. So if you're interested in that, like I said, go to that website. What else is going on? Oh, I want to congratulate my own Chicago Bears, man. They made the playoffs, and they just had their last game of the year last night. And I went and saw the game with my friend Jerome, who's also from Chicago, and he trains with me at Powerhouse Gym. He is a proud member of the Tampa Police Department. He's a great guy. So Jerome is a huge Chicago Bears fan. I don't think I've ever met anybody who loves the Bears more than Jerome. So I'm really happy for him, and I'm happy for the Bears. The Bears haven't been in the playoffs for 8 years, so we are really psyched. And all the Chicago Bears fans are psyched, and they are looking good, man. I hope they go all the way to the Super Bowl. But they got their first playoff game next week against the Philadelphia Eagles, who was last year's Super Bowl champ. So we will see what happens, but I'm excited. I didn't get any emails last week about Phil Williams' interview, which was a shame. I guess everybody's busy for the Christmas holidays. But that was a great interview, so if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it. It was a two-part interview, and we talked a lot about Phil's training and also his diet. So check that out. We basically talked about the training and the diet strategies he used to win the 1984 MPC USA, the 1985 MPC Nationals, and then the 1988 Chicago Pro Show. So check that out. Phil's a great interview. He's got a really good sense of humor, and we had a good time talking. He's kind of a good friend of mine now, and I'm really happy to say that, because Phil was a guy that I grew up admiring back in the 80s. So to be able to know these people, some of these bodybuilding legends, and to call them a friend, and hope to go out to California again soon and train with Phil. Actually, I might be going out to California in early February with Old School Labs. It hasn't been finalized yet, but that's the plan right now. I might be going out there for a week, so I'm looking forward to that. I'll go to Gold's again, of course, and train out there. And I'll be going out to Colorado on the first week in March, so I'll be doing my seminar for the AAAI organization. So I'm looking forward to going out there too, because Colorado's beautiful, and the hotel they stay at is just absolutely amazing. Well, we did have some bad news in the bodybuilding world as the year ended. Mike Watson, who was a great bodybuilder from Canada, I actually remember Mike from when I was a teenager because he was one of the best bodybuilders in Canada, and he was always featured in Muscle Mag International, which was Bob Kennedy's magazine, and that originated in Canada. But Mike Watson, I believe, was the Canadian champion, or at least he was the middleweight winner, I think, in one of the Canadian championships in the late 70s. And Mike had really good leg development. He was very, very vascular, a real fierce competitor. I definitely remember him. But he's come back into the bodybuilding scene sort of over the last few years because his son, Zane Watson, is one of the top bodybuilders in the 212 division. So people were saying, oh, yeah, his dad, Mike, used to be a bodybuilder, and I remember Mike Watson very well. And my friend Mindy O'Brien, who knew Mike very well, he was kind of a mentor to her and a coach to her, and she posted on her Facebook page, I believe it happened on December 17th, that Mike Watson unfortunately passed away of a heart attack. So that was very sad. He wasn't really that old. I think he was in his 60s. He still looked great. But, man, those heart attacks are brutal. They'll just take anybody at moment's notice. So it was a really sad, sad occasion in the bodybuilding world to lose a great champion like Mike Watson. And my heart goes out to all his friends and family, especially Zane Watson. I'm sure he was really destroyed by that because he was very, very close to his dad. So also, I did post the link to the interview I did with Strong by Design, which was the criticalbench.com. That's their podcast that they do, and I did that interview with Coach Chris Wilson a couple weeks ago, well, actually about a month ago when I went out there and did my last photo shoot with them, and I thought it was one of the best interviews I've done in a long time. It's one of my, probably my favorite interview I've done this year because we talked about when I was younger and my earlier influences and things like that. So I was going to post that link last week, but I did post it this week on the podcast. So if you go down to the podcast notes, if you want to check that out, it's on iTunes. Please give that a listen. That was really a great interview. And I thank Chris for that really good interview. He asked some really great questions. All right, before we get to our interview with Jerry Branum, I also want to mention that we are brought to you by Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that they will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results that you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number, which is 813-922-8939, or you can reach them at their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's FL for Florida, flalternativemeds.com, or call them again at 813-922-8939 and mention that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and they will give you a free consultation, plus they will give you 20% off your first order. All right, so that is it for our opening, and here is our interview with Jerry Branum to talk about what happened in the year 1968. We're going 50 years back, guys. 1968 in review, and here is Jerry Branum. Hope you enjoy it. All right, welcome to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and I have one of my favorite guests, my friend Jerry Branum, who used to work for Iron Man magazine, and he has a newsletter called Applied Metabolics. Is that right, Jerry? Applied Metabolics?
That's correct. It's at www.appliedmetabolics.com.
Okay.
Right.
So, Jerry, I thought we'd bring you on the show because we're coming up on New Year's Day of 2019, and all the bodybuilding podcasts now are doing the year in review for 2018. So I thought instead of, you know, since we're doing bodybuilding legends and we're talking about the history, why not go back in time? And so I thought we could discuss 1968, 1978, and 1988. We'll go 30, 40, and 50 years backwards, and we'll talk about what happened then instead of 2018, which really doesn't apply to our show because we're talking more about the history.
Right. Sounds good to me. Well, you know, 1968 has special meaning for me because that's when I first moved to California from New York.
Oh, really? Okay.
I arrived here August 21st, 1968. Still remember the day?
Wow.
One of the first things I did is go right to Vince's gym. You remember Vince's gym?
Yeah.
That was the big, that was the big, even before Goals, that was the big bodybuilding gym back then, at that time. Larry Scott, you know, first Mr. Olympia, Don Howard, a lot of champions, and of course Vince Guaranda, who, you know, who I luckily got along with. He was a little kind of funny kind of guy, but
hard to get
I got
along with him.
So, you know, and that's where I met Arnold at Vince's gym. So, anyway, so that has special significance, you know.
And 1968 was also the year that Arnold came to the United States.
That's exactly right. In fact, I met Arnold, I met him only, what was it, about 2 weeks after he got to the United States. I met him at Vince's gym. And I remember one of the first things we talked about was his loss to Frank Zane, which I think you probably want to talk about.
Yeah.
Frank Zane, we could get into that. Well, he had just lost to Frank Zane at the IFBB Miss Universe. I believe it was in Miami Beach.
Right.
And, of course, this was only, you know, this was only nine days after the show. I didn't know what anyone looked like. I knew what Arnold looked like.
Yeah.
Because I'd seen him in the magazines. I knew he was a really big guy, a young guy that, what was he, like 21, 22 years
21,
old?
21, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we could talk about that, but it's an interesting story, you know, what he told me. It's very interesting.
So what was your impression of Arnold when you met him, Jerry?
The thing is about Arnold is that I watched Arnold evolve over the years. And people who knew him back in Europe told me that he was kind of the equivalent of an American person who kind of lives up in the hills, kind of backwards, you know, not sophisticated. And that's more or less, I found that to be true.
Hmm.
The original Arnold, remember, he spoke broken English. And, you know, did I ever tell you the story about, you know, when he first came to Vince's, what Vince said to him? Did I ever tell you that story?
Yeah, tell that story. I heard it before, but go ahead and tell it.
Well, what happened was, this is how I met Arnold.
Okay.
I go, you know, remember, I got along well with Vince. You know, Vince was a funny guy. Either you hated him or you loved him. I loved him. I thought he was just a incredibly knowledgeable guy. To me, once you get to know him, he was hilariously funny. He really was. But anyway, I used to sit and talk to Vince after the workouts, and he said to me one day, he says, "Hey, Jerry, this guy Arnold Schwitzenbender is coming to." I said, "Who?" He said, some Europe. I said, wait a minute, Vince, you mean Arnold Schwarzenegger? He said, "Yeah, that's him." I said, "Vince, that guy's a sensation in Europe. He's already won like two Miss Universe contests." I said, "He's like 21 years old and he's gigantic. He's tremendous."
Yeah.
He's coming to the gym. He says, "Yeah." So sure enough, Arnold shows up a couple of hours later and he walks right up to Vince and he says, "I am Arnold Schwarzenegger, Mr. Universe." And so Vince like looks at his face, goes slowly down his body, back up to his face, and he says, "You look like just a big fat fuck to me." And I looked at Arnold. And I hadn't actually spoken to Arnold at this point, but Arnold's jaw dropped. He was like in shock.
Uh-huh.
So I immediately went up to him and I introduced myself. I wasn't even writing back then. You know, I just was a guy at the gym, you know. What was I, 18 years old? So I said to him, "Listen, Arnold, first of all, let me tell you, you know, Vince, it was out of range. Vince couldn't hear me say this. I said, I have seen you in the magazines. I think you're sensational. I said, you're only a little bit older than me. And look at you. You're twice my size." I said, said, "You are a prodigy." I said, "You know, you could do anything in bodybuilding." I said, "Let me explain Vince. Vince has a little procedure. Anyone who first joins his gym, he insults them. And it depends on, and depending on their reaction, he likes them or he doesn't. In other words, if you don't react, if you let him insult you and kind of laugh it off, he likes you."
Yeah.
Now, I was told about him. So when he insulted me, just like he insulted you, he insulted me also. I laughed, and that's why we get along. So don't take it personal. He does this to everybody. It's just his personality.
Right.
So Arnold, he liked that. He calmed down, and he was okay, you know, and this and that.
Yeah.
But the really interesting part of the story, Arnold and I became friends. I remember he was on a very low. Joe Weider had brought him over. He was giving him like just barely enough money to live on, and I remember. The first car he leased him was a Volkswagen Beetle, I remember.
Right.
And Arnold used to drive in the Beetle. And Arnold was a big guy. I was like, what? I was maybe 190. I wasn't nearly as big as him. But when we sat in that car, it was like being in a sardine can because we were like crunched in there, you know?
Right.
But so we became good friends. Arnold, after the workout, there was a supermarket across the street from Vince's. And Arnold, I mean, Arnold would actually, you know, we'd walk over there. Arnold would actually buy my groceries.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, you know, we got to be good friends. And one time I asked him, I said, Arnold, wasn't there a contest you competed in recently? He said, yeah, the Miss Universe. You know, that's the first American show. I said, what happened? He says, I'll show you what happened. So it turns out that Rita had actually rented him an apartment only about two blocks away from Vince, right off Ventura Boulevard there in Studio City. So I walked over to Arnold's apartment, and as soon as I opened the door, the first thing I see is a guy running around the room wearing boxer shorts, you know?
Uh-huh.
And like Arnold acted like he wasn't there. So I whispered to Arnold, I said, who is that guy? He says, that's Paul Graham. He's a wrestler. Good. He's a friend of mine. He says he goes under the name Lord Paul. Now, now think about it. Later on, became the IFBB honcho of all of Australia. He became the head of the IFBB in Australia. This was the same Paul Graham. He never acknowledged me the whole time I was sitting in. He never said hello, never tried to introduce him. He just walked around in the boxer shorts.
Unbelievable.
So Arnold sits me down and he says, let me show you the medallion that all the competitors had to wear at this show in Miami Beach where Frank Zane beat me. And so he hands me this kind of big medallion, and I look at it, and as clear as day, there's Frank Zane in the double arm. He didn't even try and disguise his face. It was Frank Zane on the medallion,
On the
right?
medallion, unbelievable.
He says, also this, and he hands me a program from the show, and on the cover of the program is Frank Zane. Again, He says, what does it look like to you? He says, of course it was fixed, he goes. He said, I'm much bigger than Frank Zane, you know?
Right.
So, Arnold, it looks pretty bad, I'll tell you. I mean, to have a competitor, you know, be on the medallions that all the guys wearing on the program, I have to admit, it doesn't look good.
Right.
So, but what happened was, that when the magazines came out about 2 months later, you know, it took a little time back then. There was no internet. This is 1968 when the magazines did come out. And I saw the photos. I looked at Arnold. Arnold, sure enough, was much bigger than Zane, but he was very pasty, had no tan.
Right.
And he was very bulky. And Zane was tan and cut and, you know, much smaller, but much more finished.
Yeah.
And I said to myself, well, Zane actually deserved to win, you know. Now, the interesting part of the story is that many, many years later, I mean, this is like, I think it was Arnold, I think it might have been when he was the governor of California. My phone rings. And I hear a voice. He says, hello, Jerry, this is Arnold. And I said, oh, God. I said, you know, I figured somebody's playing a joke on me, imitating Arnold. I said, okay, who is this? I have to admit, you got his voice down really good. Who is this? He says, no, this is really Arnold. He says, I got your number from John Bailey. You know, he wanted to ask me, he was going to give a speech and he wanted to talk about nutrition. And he wanted to know when protein powders were first introduced. So we chatted a little bit, you know, I said, I'm going to test you. I said, only the real Arnold would know this. I said, when Arnold mixed his protein drinks, he would add a unusual ingredient to it. Only Arnold would know this. What did he add? He says, oh, you're talking about the schnapps. It really is you, Arnold. Bit of whiskey to
it. Oh, really?
He thought that would cause the, you know, because he knew that alcohol is absorbed very rapidly.
Yeah.
So he thought the alcohol would pull the protein in his body faster. that was early form of bro science.
Right.
But looking at Arnold, what are you going to argue with?
Right. It worked.
So I said to him, Arnold, I said, do you remember that conversation we had many years ago? Well, you told me that you should have beaten Frank Zane, and you showed me the pro. He says, no, the truth of the matter is Frank Zane was the better man that night, and he deserved to win.
Wow.
And I said, oh, that's big of you to say that, Arnold. I mean, you know, he says, oh, it was the truth.
Yeah.
He said, I came over a little raw. You know, it was a different level of competition here. You had to be harder, and I made some changes, and I, you know the rest, he goes. I said, you know, that was that story, you know.
Yeah. That's great that you got to meet him when he first came over and you became good friends with him and stuff. That was really cool.
Oh, yeah. He was basically, because of his lack of, he spoke broken English.
Yeah.
But because he didn't speak, let's say, English fluently, he would often, he'd take things wrong. You know, he thought people would be laughing at him when they weren't. And
yeah.
it was a completely different Arnold in the early days, and I watched him evolve, and without realizing it, Arnold actually used a psychological technique they call modeling. What he did was make believe he was something that he was. In other words, he started to act very confident and self-assured. You know, and this is what you see in some of those, like Pumping Iron, all that stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, and eventually, he actually took on the persona he was playing. In other words, he became the person he was trying to be. In other words, he actually became the super confident. You know, I saw it right in front of me because, I say, Arnold, who was here in the first 3 years in the United States, was a completely different guy than you see today. Completely different.
Wow.
I mean, you know, it's not that he wasn't friendly or funny or anything like that. He just wasn't as sure as himself. Let's put it that way.
Well, that's surprising to hear, because when you think of Arnold, you always think of him as someone very confident and very sure of himself, you know?
No, it took him a couple of years to develop that, but, you know, wow. He did a great job. You know, very few people that match his self-confidence and self-belief. That's
absolutely.
Why.
Absolutely, yeah.
I think that's a large key to his success.
Yeah, right? Yeah. He's always been one of the most amazing success stories to me, you know, when I look at his life and how he's been able to accomplish stuff and how he's learned things, like you said, how he learned to get better, you know, as he went along.
Well, Arnold did also a smart thing, is he was open to learning from people that knew more than him. In other words, he wasn't arrogant. In other words, somebody, like, for example, when he started making enough money to invest, he had some friends that knew a lot about real estate, and he kind of listened to them, and he, you know, they instructed him how to, for example, purchase apartment buildings and this and that, mm-hmm. and he kind of picked up on it, and of course, you know, by the time he went into acting, he was also already a multimillionaire from his real estate holdings.
Yeah.
He used to talk to Joe Weider about buying art, because Joe was into buying art, and Arnold listened to that, and then somebody said, you should go to business school. So he did this kind of correspondence course, although it says in his biography, I get a laugh at this, that he got a business degree from the University of Wisconsin. In fact, he never set foot on the campus. He was in correspondence school,
okay.
You know, where, you know, he did get a business degree. So it's real. It's from a real school, but it was kind of a correspondent rather than actually attending classes.
Yeah, yeah. You know?
But he did attend classes at Santa Monica College, I remember, where he, you know, he learned a lot of English, and he became very fluent in English.
Hmm.
And so Arnold is that's a good quality he has, where he has open mind, he's willing to learn, and he uses what he learns to his advantage. People should take a lesson from that.
Yeah.
That's a big key to his success.
Yeah.
And also, he was impossible to discourage. I mean, once he set a goal, nothing on earth would stop him from attaining it.
Mm-hmm.
I remember having a conversation with the guy where he mentioned that, actually, it was right around the same time. It was 1968. We were walking down Ventura Boulevard after a work at Vince's. And Arnold said to me, he said, you know, Jerry, he says, you know how when people talk about muscles, they say things like muscles like Steve Reeves. Of course, Steve Reeves was the big superstar at the time from the Hercules movies, you know, the most famous bodybuilder.
Right.
He says, one day, mark my words, one day the expression will be muscles like Arnold Schwarzenegger. Which became true, right?
Yeah, sure.
But his next sentence really kind of threw me. He says, my plans include winning the Miss Universe 6 times, then winning the Mr. Olympia at least 6 times. And after my bodybuilding is over, I'm going to go into movies. This is 1968.
Yeah.
And I'm going to become a big star just like Steve Reeves. That's when I said the following to him. I said, Arnold, I put my hand on his shoulder. I said, Arnold, I said, I consider you a friend, so please don't take this wrong. I said, but the way the acting industry here is, I mean, the studio system, I said, a big guy like you with your accent, I said, I don't think you could ever become a movie star. I said, you could be like, you know, leg breakers in the background.
Right.
You could play guys that don't have any lines.
Right.
I said, I don't really, I wouldn't really. He says, and he says, that's okay, we'll see. I mean, I could not have foreseen that he'd become this like huge superstar.
Right.
He did it.
Right.
I used that anecdote to show that this guy could not be discouraged.
Yeah.
Because if it was reversed and somebody said this to me, I'd probably think about it. I'd say, gee, you know, maybe I'd be wasting my time, you know, and I would think about it. But Arnold, his mindset, I mean, I've never met a guy, let me put it this way, in my whole life who, once he set a goal, could not be deterred. Nothing. Not, you could throw anything at him, you know? So, I mean, I remember when I was thinking of going to medical school. I mean, I read a bunch of things and people told me how hard it was to get in and this and that. And, you know, and it discouraged me and I gave it up.
Hmm.
You know, you see, Arnold would have said, screw that. I'm going to try it anyway.
Yeah.
You know, so he had that over me. I mean, I was unfortunately influenced, not so much today, but back then when I was younger, I was. But even as a young man, nothing could deter Arnold. Nothing. I mean, the guy was incredible in that sense.
Wow.
Never anybody like that.
Speaking of Mr. Olympia, Sergio Oliva won in 1968. That was his second Mr. Olympia contest that he won. Were you at that show? Because I know you went to some of those other shows at the Brooklyn Academy of Music in the 1960s.
I wasn't at that show, but I can tell you a story about that.
Okay.
When Sergio won that second contest, I remember I had just gotten I had a subscription to Iron Man magazine. And they had just gotten the issue that had that the report of that 68 Olympia in there.
Mm-hmm.
And if I remember correctly, in that Olympia, Sergio was unopposed.
Right.
You know, is that, nobody even wanted to compete against him, right? So I remember, you know, they had pictures of Sergio. And one picture was Sergio in a pose like this with his arms out like that, you know. And I showed it to Arnold. You know, I remember Arnold was wearing that big tank top he used to wear. And I showed it to Arnold. I could still remember his words. He's looking at the pictures of Sergio. He says, he's incredible. He says, no one can ever beat him. That was his exact words.
Wow.
It's funny when you think what happened in the ensuing years.
Yeah.
Because if I remember correctly, in 1969, didn't he actually beat Arnold? Or was that, that was 69?
Yeah, Sergio beat Arnold in 69, and then Arnold beat him in 1970. So that was the next year, yeah.
So in other words, Sergio actually did beat Arnold a year later.
Yeah.
And then Arnold, of course, he started, that's when he started to really refine his physique.
Right.
And of course, 1970, you know, after that, I think he also beat him in 72 also.
Yeah.
Sergio wasn't allowed to compete in 71, I think, because of some sort of political thing with the IFBB.
Right.
Because Sergio had, I think he had competed in Sergio Brace Federation there in Europe or something like
that. No, it was the NABBA universe against Bill Pearl, remember? When Bill Pearl beat him.
You're right.
Yeah.
The NABBA universe, right.
Yeah.
So he skipped 71. And of course, in 72, that was the show in Germany.
Yeah, that's in Germany.
State, which remains very controversial. I wasn't at that one either, but I remember talking. I ran into a couple of the guys that competed about a week after the show. I remember running into Frank Zane and asking him, and he said that he told me Sergio should have won.
Hmm.
Sergio better shape than Arnold. And I asked about three other guys who I can't even remember who were also in the show or who were there. They also repeated the same thing. Sergio should have won.
Wow. Hmm.
You know, the only one bodybuilder. I didn't ask Arnold, but only one bodybuilder who I spoke to about it said that Arnold should have won. That was Franco Colombo.
Yeah, of course. His buddy.
He's the best, he knows. Sure enough, again, when the photos came out, honestly, to this day, it's not that Arnold looked bad, but Sergio was at his all-time
best, right.
Absolutely phenomenal that year. I still think that Sergio, I don't know if Arnold would admit that today. You know, he gave credit to Frank Zane, but I don't know if he... you know, I don't think he'd give credit to Sergio for being better that year, but I believe he was. I think most people agree.
In 68, you think Sergio was still better than Arnold, right?
Oh, yeah. Sergio was still harder.
Yeah.
You know, they talk about genetics in bodybuilding, John. You always hear this thing about you have to have good genetics to get to the elite level.
Right.
And, you know, if you look at pure genetics, I think that Sergio was more genetically gifted than Arnold.
Yeah.
I mean, and there's a number of reasons because – for one thing, I mean, I'm good friends with Sergio Oliva Jr. He's told me a lot of things about his father and all that. And there's already things I knew. Sergio basically was a kind of on-the-cuff guy. I mean, he didn't diet. He did everything wrong. I mean, he did all these short movements.
Yeah.
He overtrained, you know. I mean, he did everything wrong. Yet he built that physique, that tiny, tiny waist. I remember when I saw him in person the first time, I couldn't believe how his waist to shoulder taper.
Yeah.
You got to see him in person to believe it. Even in the photos, it doesn't really display what he showed. His waist looked tiny.
Yeah.
The only guy who I ever saw who looked had a really smaller waist than Sergio was a guy named Brian Buchanan. You might remember, who won Universe. This Brian Buchanan had the smallest waist of any normal size man I've ever met. I mean, he told me he had a 27-inch waist. And if you see him, his waist was like tiny.
Yeah.
And I said to him once in the gym, I said, Brian, he used to walk around, with a lifting belt that, it made his waist so small. I said, Brian, do you realize that you have a smaller waist than all the women in the gym? I said, that's genetic, right? He says, no, not really. I said, what do you mean? He says, both my parents were short and fat. That's what Brian said.
Really?
Began.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Now, Brian Buchanan was kind of a jokester. He liked to joke around. I don't know whether he was kidding me or not. I find it hard to believe that body came from two short, fat parents.
Doesn't make sense.
It could be true, but again, he loved to joke, Brian Buchanan.
Right.
And he used to say to me stuff like, when I'd show up, and he knew me pretty well. I mean, I did a couple of articles on him. I remember when I showed up at the 88, I think it was the 88 Olympia. Is that the one that was in L.A.?
Yeah.
I remember showed up and, they had the guys just standing around, and Brian Buchanan said to me, remember, he knew me. And this is an example of his humor. He says, Jerry, do you actually lift weights? So I had a quick comeback. I said, do you? We both laughed.
Right.
He said this in front of a bunch of people, like he thought I would get all embarrassed and stuff like that.
Yeah,
yeah. That stuff doesn't bother me. You can't get to me by saying that. So. I get it all the time. People will say to me, hey, did you used to lift weights?
Right.
And I used to get annoyed about it like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I said, I look that bad where people don't even look like right. Now my typical answer is, I lifted weights about 60, 70 years ago. And I laugh.
Right.
It always leads to people scratching their head. Well, you just look that old.
So when you saw Sergio in 66, when he was competing against Larry Scott, he was much better at 68, right? He was much bigger.
Much better.
Yeah.
He was bigger. He was like 30, 40, well, not 40, but it looked like he was about 20-30% bigger.
Yeah.
And he was also much harder.
Yeah.
Because when he competed against Scott, he was more or less kind of fresh off being an Olympic weightlifter. He had only had, maybe 2 years of bodybuilding, of straight bodybuilding training at the time.
Yeah.
So he was nowhere near his potential, which started to come out, like you say, around, maybe 68, 69. That's when he really – and he peaked, I believe, in 72. That's when you had the greatest Sergio of all.
Right.
The funny thing is, and I told this to Sergio Oliva Jr. when I first met him, I didn't like Sergio Oliva because I tried to talk to him on a number of occasions, and he was always very nasty to me. He was I don't think it was a personal thing, but he knew that I worked for Joe Weider, and he didn't like Joe Weider. So he kind of took down on me. And, in retrospect, today I wouldn't take it as personal as I did back then. But I told, but I still give the guy credit. As I told Sergio Jr., I said, I didn't have a good opinion of your father because I met him three times and all three times were bad. But I said, as far as a bodybuilder, he is without question one of the most genetically greatest bodybuilders of all time. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
And Sergio Jr. said, yeah, he could be a real bastard. And I told Sergio Jr., it's a funny story, I told Sergio Jr. the time that I first met Sergio, which was at that Mr. Olympia. I came up to him backstage at the Brooklyn Academy of Music, and I asked him for an autograph. I was a kid. I was, 16 years old, something like that. And I asked him for an autograph, and I remember he was wearing this bloody butcher's robe. It had blood all over it.
Right.
He was pumping up, I called him Mr. Oliva. I said, Mr. Oliva, can I have an autograph? I had this little pad, with a pen.
Yeah.
And he says, he looked at me, and he says, get the fuck out of my face. And, you know, I was a Brooklyn kid, kind of a, you know, when you go in Brooklyn, you're ready to get in a fight in 2 seconds.
Right.
So I looked at him, and I was about to respond. I was going to, you know, in kind, but I looked at this guy. I looked at all the blood on the rope. I looked at his face, and he had scars on his face, and he just looked like a really rough guy. He had hair back then, you know.
Yeah.
I said, nah, I'm not going to say anything. I just turned and walked away, and I told that story to Sergio Jr. So now we have a kind of standing joke. Every time I come into Gold's Gym, if Sergio Jr. is there, like at the other end of the gym, he'll yell across the gym at me, "Hey, Jerry." I said, "What, Sergio?" He said, "Get the fuck out of my face."
It's a funny story. Yeah, that's great.
Honestly, I mean, I know you probably have spoken to Sergio, John, and you know, a lot of people have told me that, you know, if you get him at the right time, he was a good person. He wasn't a bad guy.
Right.
So, you know, I'm not holding a grudge after all these years. I think it was more a case of me being associated with Joe Weider.
Yeah, when I held that against you.
And he just didn't like Joe.
Yeah.
You know, for a number of reasons. And he took it out of me. So I'm not going to take it personally. I have nothing against it. I'm sorry he died. You know, and again, to me, far and away, maybe even the most genetically gifted bodybuilder of all time was Sergio. And I say that because he didn't do anything right. And he still looked like that.
Yeah.
I said to Sergio Jr., I said, you know, if most people use your father's nutritional training practices, they would have no physique at all. And look at him. Right. Look at what he did.
I know.
The guy's a phenomenon. He was just a genetic freak.
Yeah, it is. It's amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah, you know.
Hey, talking about the amateurs in 68, Jim Hayslop was the winner of the Mr. America, and he beat out Boyer Coe. Do you remember Jim Hayslop?
I sure do. I remember him. In fact, when I first saw Jim Hayslop, I wasn't at that contest, but because I hadn't started working for the magazines yet. But when I saw the photos of Jim Hayslop, the first impression I got was this guy has like Steve Reeves structure.
Yeah, exactly.
He had broad shoulders, good delts, good cap delts, small waist. I mean, he looked like he was about maybe 5'11", you know, pretty tall.
Yeah.
And he had beautiful sweeping thighs.
Yeah.
Calves. And the guy had everything, and I said, geez, I mean, how do you beat a guy with a structure like that? But my friend Richard Baldwin, I think you've spoken to Richard,
yes. Mm-hmm.
He actually competed against him or saw him in person. I had never seen Jim. And I said, what's the deal with this guy, Jim Hayslop, Richard? He said he had a great structure, but he was never cut.
Mm.
He was hard. He was always, I mean, he didn't have any fat on his waist or anything like that, but he never was ripped, ever, you know.
Yeah.
That was his problem. That's why he probably couldn't have really gone all the way as a pro. And I think he, if I remember correctly, I think it was 68, he won it in 68. Was it 68 when he won the AU America, Jim Hayslop?
Over Boyer Coe, yeah.
Didn't he go to London, the NAB Universe, and he didn't win?
Yeah, Dennis Tenorino won.
Dennis Tenorino beat him, and there's your answer. That underscores what you said. Dennis is always a very close old friend of mine. Dennis was always cut. That was his forte.
Yeah.
I mean, he had great abs. I mean, I used to watch Dennis just, you know, we'd be talking. He'd suddenly lump on the floor and do like 300 crunch sit-ups. I mean, the guy was always working his abs. I mean,
he
was ripped. I mean, Dennis's forte was, of course, he won the Mr. America, Mr. Universe a couple of times.
Right.
I mean, you know, even though Hayslop had a much better structure than Dennis, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But Dennis's hardness. And so the London judges, the NAPA judges, saw it, you know, gave it to Dennis because he's more finished physique. It's the same reason why Chet Young beat Arnold in the 66?
66, NAPA Universe.
Again, Arnold was much, you look at the photos, Arnold basically dwarfed Chet.
Yeah.
But Chet was far more finished. And Arnold's calves were very weak at that show, whereas Chet had, you know, one of his features, he had good calves.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, he beat Arnold. You know, that's one of the few guys. Who was it? I think it was Chet Yoan, Frank Zane. I think it was one of the persons.
And Sergio. Beat Arnold. Sergio.
Yeah, that's it. Those are the only three people that Arnold ever lost to.
Yeah.
And each time, by the way, it was fully merited. In other words, Arnold's not ripped off. He deserved to lose those three guys.
Right, right.
You know, so that's my opinion, anyway. You know?
Yeah. So if we look at 1968 as a whole, what do you think the biggest story of the year was? Was it Arnold probably coming to America, right?
I would say Arnold coming to America, because that was the beginning of this tremendous bodybuilding, you know, acting, political career, I mean, real estate investing. I mean, when he gives those speeches today, he always talks about how he came here with nothing but a suitcase.
Yeah.
And you know what? I got it. John, I was there. I witnessed. He's not lying.
Yeah.
He had literally nothing. The man had nothing. I mean, he came here. Weider brought him over. Weider, like I said, rented him that apartment, gave him, leased him that Volkswagen Beetle. I mean, he just built it up on himself.
Mm.
And, you got to give the man credit. I mean,
absolutely.
So that was the big story that year. And also, I think a secondary story would be, that was in 60. I was going to say Don Holworth winning the America. But in 68, it was John DeCola, if I remember, right? Didn't he win the IFBB America?
Yeah, I think you're right, because, that might have been 69. Was it Zane that won the America that year? And then Zane won the Universe.
Oh, you're right. 67 was Don Holworth, 68 was Zane, and 69 was DeCola. That's right.
Right. Okay.
I saw John DeCola win a contest. I didn't see him win that IFBB
America.
Maybe I might have been there. I don't remember that one, but I did see him win a contest way back in I think it was 64, believe it or not. I think I saw him compete at a show in New York, and I tremendously admired his physique. I mean, because DeCola, who probably he's still alive as far as I know. He's a trainer, and from what I understand, he's in pretty good shape. But thank God the guy's still alive, you know. But I mean, the thing is, I remember him having a head-to-toe body. See, I always admired that. I judged early contests. You know, I actually, shortly after I stopped competing myself, I was a judge at some, not major shows, but shows. And I always, my philosophy as a judge was always judge head-to-toe.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't give the contest, the overall award, to the guy with the biggest arms or, you know, the biggest delt. He had to have everything. Everything had to be, not only did he have all the muscles, the calves, hamstrings, lower back, upper back definition, but it had to be in balance. It had to be symmetrical.
Right.
That to me, the man that actually met that criteria the closest. I mean, let's face it, nobody's perfect. You know,
right.
Rarely do you see it. I mean, Arnold had flaws, Sergio had flaws. Everybody does. Every human being. That's the nature of man. But the man that came closest to that judging criteria, that's the one I would award. And I actually also judged early female body. They asked me to judge early female, and I remember the first thing I did. I said to myself, I am not going to vote for the prettiest woman or the sexiest woman, because you know what? This is a bodybuilding show. I'm going to treat these women just like athletes, like bodybuilders. I don't care if the woman is dog ugly. If she has the best body, I'm going to vote for her. And I remember at one show, I voted for this woman that was really muscular. I mean, I don't know whether she was taking anything or not, drugs, but I mean, she just overshadowed all the other women. I mean, you know, this early female bodybuilding.
Right.
And she wasn't as big as the women got later, but she still was, you know, she looked, let's say, much more athletic and muscular than the other women. Remember, in those days, they kind of looked like, they look like the bikini girls do today. You know, just in shape and no real muscle definition.
Right.
This woman had muscle definition. So I voted her first, but she was very unattractive, you know. And I remember one of the other judges said, he said to me, Jerry, how can you vote for that dog? My God. I said, what are you talking about? This is a bodybuilding show. Forget her face.
Right.
I said, women should never be judged on their physical appearance. I said, I'm sorry, but honestly, between me and you, when I view these current contests, like, you know, the bikini and some of the fitness girls, I do think that they are judged on their facial looks.
Yeah.
I think it's not that ugly girls don't win, but, you know, I if it's close between two women, let me put it this way, the woman that's more attractive will win. That's the way it's judged. That's what I see.
Yeah.
I mean, whether judges are consciously doing this or not, I don't know. The only way you would, in other words, what I'm saying is if you had an all-female judging panel, I think a lot of the results would be different, because the female judges aren't going to judge on a woman's attractiveness. They're going to judge strictly on the criteria to win, whatever it is, you know, whether it's the fitness or the bikini. They don't care what the woman looks like.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's what I think, but they'll never do that, of course.
You know? Right. Well, Jerry, I want to thank you for joining us. You spent a lot of time talking about the old days, so I appreciate it. And it's always great to hear your stories, and it's great to talk to you again. And I want to wish you a happy new year for 2019.
Absolutely. I hope you have a great and healthy new year yourself, too. And keep up this great work. I always look forward to your videos about, you know, the great bodybuilders of the past.
And yeah.
To me, it is literally a stroll down memory lane.
Exactly.
I sit there, if you saw me watching, I got this big smile on my face the whole time. Right. It's great.
That's great to hear.
Keep up the great work.
All right, I will. All right, buddy. All right, thanks again, Jerry. Thanks for your time, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Take care, John. Bye-bye.
All right, Jerry. Take care.
All right, thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast. I want to thank our sponsors, Florida Alternative Medicine and Old School Labs, for again sponsoring this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast. Happy New Year, everybody. I hope everybody has a safe and prosperous New Year, and all the best in 2019. I hope you guys come back and continue listening to our show. And next week on the podcast, we will have part two of our interview with Jerry Branum, where we'll talk about the year 1978. So I hope you join us then. Take care, everybody. Happy New Year.